This is Reset. I'm Odette Youssef in for Jen White. December 31st is finally here, and that means many of us are thinking about what's to come in 2020 and about changes we want to make in the new year. And a lot of those resolutions and goals involve something we heard about in 2019, self-care.
I am not going anywhere. I'm playing Quasi Cupcakes. I'm hydrated as hell, and I'm listening to Sheryl Crow.
Some of you may be thinking ahead to how you'll be better in 2020. But today we want to discuss something a little different from New Year's resolutions. We're talking about how you've been taking care of yourself. A May poll by the American Psychiatric Association said one in three Americans felt more anxious this year than the last. Whether it's stresses in your personal life, your work life, or just bigger issues in the world, how have you kept yourself sane? Joining us to talk self-care are two healthcare providers, Ginny Cristerna, licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist with International High Achievers, and Molly Cooling, massage therapist and Reiki practitioner. We're taking your calls this hour. Do you practice self-care? If so, what do you do? Call us at 312-923-9239. That's 312-923-9239. Molly, Ginny, welcome to you both.
Thanks, Odette, for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
So it's New Year's Eve. A lot of people are thinking about how they're going to be improved in 2020. Let's pick apart that difference between, you know, self-improvement versus just self-care. I'd be interested to hear from you, Ginny. Like, where is the distinction between those things?
It's a very thin line, Odette, I will tell you, because oftentimes what people will do is think that it will change if they wake up and they decide, I'm going to be different. And that's usually not how it goes. So self-improvement is the first step. Self-care is maintenance. So if you haven't put in the work to improve yourself, then there's really not much to care for or maintain that's different than how you've been doing it before. So that would be the difference. So if you want something different, you're going to have to do some work and then maintain that work.
So they're closely linked.
Very closely linked. They're a process.
Yeah. So Molly, how do you define self-care?
Yeah. I define self-care as doing all the things. I think of it as how you would take care of almost a child. Like, what is it that's going to be nourishing and help that child to grow and develop in a healthy way, and look at yourself that way and start to implement those habits. So it's not so much about reaching a certain goal as just doing the things on a regular basis that are about taking care of you in a way that ultimately perhaps will lead you to bring out those parts of yourself that haven't been as in the forefront. So that might look like self-improvement in the end, too, if you're taking better care of yourself.
So I'm going to share sort of what I was doing to take care of myself. And none of it really was improving myself in any way. It was just a way for me to allow myself to recharge and give myself space. You know, I binged on a few television shows. I read a lot more fiction than I have in the past. You know, I did more cooking. Those are some of the things that made me feel like I was attending to my own needs, giving myself some creative space. How does that sort of fit in with self-care? You both talked about sort of working on yourself and so on. But this was just me sort of letting go of any notions of, oh, watching TV is a waste of time or anything, and just letting myself enjoy what I enjoy. Ginny, what do you say to people who look at self-care maybe as including that?
That's an essential part of self-care, right? So what we want to encourage people to do is tap into that creative part and not judge and make things so structured. That's not self-care when it's so structured and rigid that you can't deviate from it. Being able to binge on things, being able to play is crucial to self-care because those are parts of you that also need attention, that also need expression. So yeah, if you want to binge, if you want to paint, if you want to play, do those things because those things help you to feel alive.
Molly, what did self-care look like for you in 2019?
It's interesting you talked about making space for yourself, actually, because my word for 2019, and it was probably the first year that I had a word for the year, but was space. And so basically this being the general goal to create more space in my life for doing the things that I enjoy. I tend to be pretty driven, and that can, and it sounds like maybe your self-care might look a little bit more like mine. Being a driven person, you have to almost make yourself make that time to watch TV for a little while, see something that you've been wanting to watch. So yeah, my self-care for 2019 looked very much about creating space for things outside of the ways that I already have the habits of taking care of myself, and sometimes felt almost constraining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got a caller, Derek in Albany Park, who has a comment. Derek, what would you like to share?
Hey, you guys were talking about, you know, self-care and making space and stuff, and I just wanted to share that this last year I decided to walk the year, which was a challenge I'd kind of heard about around my office and kind of took seriously. I kind of did the math and figured, you know, it's about 5.5 miles a day, and I just started to do it. And it started off as like a number goal, you know, to walk the year, kind of clever, but it actually turned into like daily affirmation of self-care, time to spend, you know, with my thoughts or with friends. And of course there's like health benefits, but there was just so much more to it too, especially in Chicago. Chicago's so connected. I was able to connect parts of the city that I'd never thought of before, because instead of jumping in the car or even jumping on the train or something, I would, you know, walk to work. My work is downtown, for example, from even Albany Park, which sounded kind of crazy at first, but actually when you walk it, you realize there's just so much beautiful city in between here and there and stuff. So that was what I did in this past year for self-care, and I think it was the best thing I've ever done for myself for lots of reasons.
Derek, are you going to continue to do that in 2020?
I am. I got so excited about it actually this year that I made a little Facebook group and invited my friends who wanted to do it with me to do it this next year, because there's a lot of tips and things that go into it, down to like, you know, even the kind of footwear to, you know, where I went through shoes like I never went through shoes before, and little tips and stuff. So yes, I'm definitely going to do it again this year. And I think daily walks at least are something that's just part of my life now.
Thanks, Derek. I'd love to hear a reaction to that. Molly, what do you think?
Well, shout out to, I just moved out of Albany Park, and that is a long walk to downtown. I can't say that I ever did it. But I think the part about making the Facebook group struck me, because one of the things I was thinking about today's show was having a strong social life, but with boundaries, is really an important part of self-care. We can either tend to isolate ourselves or overcommit, but then also having support and supporting others in doing things that are healthy for us is, I think, that helps us just maintain it, and it just becomes a part of who you are and a part of your community. Yeah. So that's great.
Jenny, your thoughts?
I love it. You go. Well, not physically and just
he's
in a literal sense, he's going, but you know, figuratively as well, because one of the things that happens when we're curious and when we play is something like this can come up, right? So I tell people all the time, think about something that you probably wouldn't do. Try it. You might like it. You may love it, and it may turn into a thing, right? So do not judge anything that you do, because things like this that are just wonderful come out of that. So I think it's fantastic.
312-923-9239. That's the number to call to share your self-care practices and tips. 312-923-9239. Let's go to Ariel in Woodlawn. What would you like to share with us, Ariel?
So one of the things that I do for self-care is I go to cuddle parties. And these parties are, they're facilitated by a professional who starts off with a workshop about consent and boundaries. And it's really a safe place for people to receive touch and get the oxytocin that comes from physically connecting with people without any other expectations, and a place where people can really figure out their boundaries around touch and just really have a safe place for that, especially for people also who have had trauma with regarding touch. It's all a very safe place for people to connect in that way.
Amazing. And Ariel, I'm interested to hear, the very first time you went to a cuddle party, did you have any trepidation about it? Like, what did you think when you were going to the first cuddle party that you went to?
Well, I'm the type of person that I absolutely love all kinds of touch. I love to hug people and shake people's hands and things like that. So I was really excited to do that. But my sister, she really doesn't like to receive touch from people because she had a traumatic birth experience. So One of the things that I found is that it's also a really safe place for people to connect with people without having the expectation of having to shake someone's hand or having to give someone a hug that you don't really want to do. So I was really excited about it, and I even found that there were things that I would like to do or like to connect with people that I didn't even realize. So it was a really wonderful experience for me, and the different practitioners that I've come across are really, really adept at creating a safe space for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, this is so interesting because, Molly, you were just talking about sort of maintaining social connections with people, but also keeping boundaries. I've read that physical touch with people, you know, whether it be your partner or whatever, has a chemical effect on your well-being. I wonder, Ginny, could you maybe comment a little bit about how sort of, I don't know what the correct way to put it is, but physical closeness with people might be a pathway to self-care as well.
Oh, absolutely. Some people have it in their intimate relationships. Some people have it with their social relationships with their girlfriends or their guy friends. And some people, because of traumatic births, they need to learn how to develop that. So I think that with these cuddle parties, it's a wonderful idea, especially if you have a really trained and experienced facilitator helping you to learn how to do that. It does do something to the body that we desperately need. I mean, touch and relationship and intimacy, not just sexually, is really important to our survival and to our well-being. So if that is what people need, I encourage people to go and get what you need in the best way for you.
This is Reset. We're talking self-care into 2020, and we're speaking with Jenny Cristerna, licensed clinical social worker and therapist with International High Achievers, and Molly Cooling, massage therapist and Reiki practitioner. We're taking your calls. Do you practice self-care? If so, what do you do? Call us at 312-923-9239. That's 312-923-9239. Debbie in Northbrook is calling. What do you want to share with us, Debbie?
Hi, I just wanted to let everybody know one of the things that I do pretty regularly is I work with a therapist at North Shore Colonics for colon hydrotherapy. She, you know, is all about detox and keeping the body clean, you know, kind of removing the junk in your trunk, so to speak, and keeping all my organs happy and healthy and clean and working well. So, you know, maybe once or twice a month, I get a colonic, and sometimes we do the ionic foot bath, which is kind of removing all the toxins from your feet. And, you know, I just feel so much lighter and cleaner.
All right, thanks. We have another caller, Bruce in Joliet. Bruce, what would you like to share?
Yeah, I go to a retention pond in Joliet, a beautiful little mini lake, and I take my breakfast there, and I sit in my car. It's in the parking lot of a Hooters, and I get these strange looks, but even the owners at the Hooters, they're like, you know, you're kind of like our guardian, and I'm just watching the scenery, birds, the gulls, albatross, that sort of thing. And it works for me.
Amazing. So there's, you know, interesting different approaches that people have been taking. Physical maintenance, like Debbie was saying, but some of it just sort of being outside, enjoying nature, and perhaps even meditating. I wonder, Molly, if you could comment a little bit on the meditation aspect of self-care. How has that been shown to help people?
Yeah, I mean, there's more and more research every day about the wide variety of positive impacts that meditation can have. And there are different types of meditation, and some of them work better for some people than others. So I know a lot of people talk about, you know, I tried meditation, I'm not good at it. First of all, no one is quote unquote good at meditation, especially we feel like that when we're beginning. But it's often people sort of think about it as, well, I have to clear my mind of all thoughts, and that's actually almost impossible, and that's not really what meditation is about, but rather going into a place of really zooming in on and getting getting friendly with your brain and getting friendly with your mind and learning about how that really works. And in so doing, instead of sort of continuing on in autopilot like we often do, just the busy pace of our lives, you actually start to learn your own patterns and you can catch yourself in daily life. So the benefits of meditation then extend outside of just sitting on a cushion for 20 minutes every morning or whatever it is that you do.
So how do you know when you're getting there, kind of? How do you know when you're starting to do it right?
I would say I think the biggest key is whatever happened today during your meditation, whether it was awful or great, let it go and then just do it again the next day. And that's a huge lesson for life. And so being able to have compassion and also knowing that everything comes and goes. And that's one of the things when you watch your mind, you realize everything does come and go.
We've got another caller, Kim in Arlington Heights. Kim, what would you like to share?
I'd like to share that what I do for self-care is I go to King Spa at least once every 3 months, and it's absolutely a wonderful, relaxing experience, and it's something that I recommend.
Can you, for people who haven't been to King Spa, Kim, can you describe what the experience there is like?
You do have to be a little bit brave. They have a wet spa. It is a Korean-style spa. So you go into a wet spa. They have three pools, different temperatures, warm, hot, and then even hotter. There is a very cold pool in that area, and as well as a sauna, a steam sauna. So you're supposed to spend time in hot water, go to the cold water, and then go to the steam sauna. And then they have a separate area where it's just a dry saunas of different various levels of heat, and then one ice room, as well as a restaurant. So it's very, very nice. And it's only $25 to get in.
All right. Thanks, Kim.
Experience all of that. You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
So one thing, that we've heard people talk about is taking themselves to a physical environment that might be relaxing for them. But Ginny, earlier you said that people need to work on themselves as well. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what you're getting at there?
Sure. So a big part of what I do with my patients is psychological surgery. That's what most folks fly in for. And that is looking at the triggers or the seeds that created certain types of behaviors or thought patterns that we have. So by the time we've thought it, it's already started to take root and form, from the time we were young. So we want to not just cut the tree off at a branch or two. We want to look at those things that we really do want to evolve, we want to let go of, we want to change at a deeper level and actually replace it with something that we would like to have instead. So that way our maintenance is a lot easier. That way we can enjoy the massages that Molly gives us, right? That way we can really delve into our meditations, which once you learn how to manage and understand your brain, it's supposed to take you deeper into your inner worlds if you're a Jungian, right? Or even if you're a psychoanalysis type of person. It takes you deeper inside so you can really appreciate and understand and accept every part of you and help it, all those parts, to evolve and to grow, so that way you're more aligned with who you would love to be, who you would like to be, the things that you would love to do. So when you do your maintenance, it's maintenance on those parts of you that you want to keep or you want to continue to grow. So for me, that self-improvement is really along the lines of, what is it that you would like to evolve? Not because you don't like it, but because it no longer serves you. What would you like it to transform into now? And how do you keep that going, maintaining it so it can continue to grow naturally?
We've got a caller, Emily, in Kenosha. Emily, what would you like to share?
Hi, my husband and I are both practicing Buddhists, and we have had, each of us, a long-term relationship with meditation. And I just wanted to share four of the practices that are very common in Buddhist meditation. We talked momentarily about mindfulness, which actually is a way of clearing the mind, but in a forgiving sort of way, where as each thought comes to you, whether or not it's stressful, whether or not it's a bird chirping out the window, that you can address it for a moment and then let it go. And think about like clouds passing in the sky or waves crashing on a beach, is that it's going to come to you. It's just going to happen. And you just kind of roll over the next wave. We also talk a lot about compassion, and it may be easier to think about someone in your life who is suffering or someone that you miss, and just to give as much of your kind of heart and your mind to maybe how that person is feeling. And this is not kind of a quiet meditation in your head. It can be a lot of words to it, as opposed to mindfulness, which is kind of letting the words go as they come to you. But then to wrap yourself in sort of a shroud of compassion as you move through, you know, maybe recent victims of trauma on the global stage. And then...
Okay, I think we're having a little trouble with the line there, Emily. But I would like to hear some reaction from you, Molly, to some of these Buddhist practices of meditation. How much does that align with the kind of meditation that you teach?
So I first tried to come to meditation through a Vipassana practice and have done, I would say my practice is most aligned with that, which is really a mindfulness practice, which is what she was mentioning. But there are also practices within the system of Reiki, which is what I actually teach. And if you're looking at Reiki from the Western mentality, we don't necessarily incorporate a lot of meditation practices, but they're very helpful for you to become more in tune with the work that you're doing as a Reiki practitioner, whether you're working on yourself or on somebody else. And so those practices can look like there's some use of the breath and using the breath as a mindfulness tool. There are chanting exercises, which is a little bit different than meditation, but it really gets you to the same place. And then actually, if you're really kind of harnessing the power of your mind and able to really start to focus, your Reiki practice itself, which could be like a hands-on healing session with somebody, would be very meditative in and of itself.
So I want to put the question to you, Ginny, about sort of this line between sort of the what we may consider sort of popular or media representations of self-care, whether that may be going to a spa or something like that, versus a very real need that some people may have for mental health services. Can you talk a little bit about how where the line is between those two things and how the talk about or popularization of the notion of self-care may affect whether people seek out mental health care if they need it.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so excited you asked that question. So just give me my time signal if I overspeak.
Okay.
So one of the things that's so important for people to understand is that self-care, going to the spa, you know, meditation, those are all very, very valuable practices, and that we need them in our everyday lives. We really do. Where the slippery slope is people will use those as ways of escaping, dealing with things that are truly troubling. And oftentimes we're concerned that, you know, it's going to be worse than it is. And in the beginning, it usually isn't. So because we don't address our emotional wellness, right, it begins to intensify and grow in nature, and now it becomes, you know, an issue, if you will, or a real challenge, or even sometimes a crisis. So one of the things that I do want people to understand is mental health, the stigma around that is still there, although it has gotten better. But I want people to really think about mental health as emotional wellness. You should have a therapist the way you have a primary physician, or if you're a woman, the way you have a gynecologist, and you should go for your emotional wellness checkups. My patients, I've almost 30 years, you know, I graduated from SSA, you know, Molly and I were talking, she was over there as well, but I graduated last century. And it is such a nice evolution, but it's one of those things that emotional wellness is just truly important, because if you deal with things before they become an issue, the beauty of it is that you never realize you had a problem because you address it as it comes up. So anxiety, you're supposed to have that. Anxiety, anger, sadness, even regret and despair, those are all things that allow us to heal before it becomes an issue. We cannot substitute our maintenance, our self-care, our going to the spa. Those are not replacements for, and they don't make go away, life's everyday challenges that are designed to help us grow.
Molly, can you chime in on this as well?
Yeah, you make me think very much, Jenny, of this term that I've heard called spiritual bypassing.
Yes. Oh my God, please speak to that child.
I have a friend who talks about this a lot because he recently lived in Encinitas and he said it's the capital of spiritual bypassing.
What is that?
So basically, you know, you might have these people, they're like, you know, I do yoga every day, I dress a certain way, I talk a certain way, and they sort of are playing a part I'm a self-care expert, it's like a modern day hippie a little bit maybe. Yet you see the way that their underlying challenges have not been addressed in the way that they have or don't have relationships with people, the way that they manage their life and their life's decisions. And so, absolutely, these practices without a solid foundation of strong mental and emotional health and continually checking in on that are often sort of floating in this space that isn't grounded in anything.
Yeah, Jenny.
And one of the things I do want to piggyback off what Molly was talking about is that there's a serious risk to creating now a mental health issue when we do that. When we spiritually bypass or when we bypass our emotions, all we are doing is creating a cumulative effect. So when we talk about mental and emotional blocks, those become thicker, those become more rigid and harder to address. And so you do see people who say they're very spiritual or they're very, you know, zen-like, and they play this role as if I ignore this, it will go away. They end up truly coming into a place in their life where they have a crisis, whether it's a midlife crisis, whether it's, you know, something else, an identity crisis. So I do want to emphasize what Molly is bringing up around spiritual bypass. It's a very real thing that is truly avoidable when we deal with life as it comes up.
Let's go to a caller, Aya in Chatham. She's got a comment. Aya, what would you like to share?
Great day. I wanted to share my self-care practice. I'm a yoga teacher, so I've been doing yoga for about 11 years, and I also really rely on community-style acupuncture. And so about 2 years ago, I opened a social wellness enterprise called Haji Healing Salon. We're located at 79th and Cottage Grove. Our goal is to support people on the south side of Chicago in making healing a lifestyle. And so we do something called community healing, which is actually using like our big storefront on 79th Street. It's one communal space where we share the space to lower the cost of services like yoga, community style acupuncture, Reiki energy healing, Asian style body work. And we even offer like mental wellness support group and different types of oracle counseling like tarot and astrology. So folks have been coming and really enjoying the services, but we recently had an issue in the salon that caused us to close. So we've been repairing the space and we reopened February 2nd. So I just really wanted to bring forward so that other people could enjoy the kind of services I always had to travel all over the city to find, right? So bringing everything together in one space. It's really a very vibrant community. And I appreciate how you guys were talking about cuddle therapy, because what I'm really trying to do is maximize on the idea that we heal, like our motto is we heal together. So by bringing everybody together to share these spaces, these healing modalities communally, we really benefit from building community.
Aya, how large is the community that's taking advantage of your salon?
It's really been growing. You know, we've faced a couple of challenges recently in that we had a catastrophic event in the space that caused us to close. But we've provided community-style acupuncture for over 1,000 people over the 2 years that we've been in the space. And most people were people who had never tried acupuncture before because it isn't the most accessible thing for folks on the south side. We have a growing community of yogis as well. And Reiki is a huge thing. So I'm happy that you guys are talking about Reiki on the show, because we even train people to become Reiki practitioners at Haji Healing Salon.
Thanks, Aya. Molly, you practice Reiki. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is?
Yeah. So I'm a Reiki practitioner. I also teach classes. It is basically, we think in the West of Reiki as hands-on or even hands slightly off healing, dealing with the energy of somebody. So basically, and sometimes people are like, what are you talking about when you talk about energy? But we all experience energy all the time. When we meet somebody, we get kind of a vibe about them, or somebody might walk in the room and the vibe changes. But we all have our energy affects our emotional, mental, spiritual, and physical health. And so with Reiki hands-on healing, which is part of a larger system of practices, what we're really doing is opening up space for that person to process whatever it is that they need to process to help get past perhaps there's emotional things that they're sort of just kind of sitting on the surface and keeping them from really being able to be in touch with their inner self. So sometimes people will come in when they're going through life transitions, but it's also used a lot for mental health issues too. I get a lot of referrals from people who are in more traditional therapy, like in psychotherapy. Maybe somebody who might be seeing Jenny is also like, hey, but I want to do this too and see what comes up there, and then maybe bring what comes up in our session back to their therapist. So it can help with anxiety, depression. It's used more and more with PTSD, particularly for veterans, but I actually have a strong mission to work with trauma survivors, particularly sexual trauma survivors, as well as Sarah, who works in my office, and Ashley. We're really committed to that aspect. So it's broad, though. It can work for pain. It helps people going through chemo. It's offered in hospitals while people are actually getting their chemotherapy.
Interesting. We've got another caller. Doug in Oak Park is 92 years old and changed your life completely at age 65. Do I have that right, Doug?
Yeah, pretty close.
What's your story?
Well, up to 65, I did all the wrong things wrong. Ate the wrong foods, drank was alcoholic, did very little exercise, and finally was told, you keep doing this, you won't live to 70. So I changed all those things. Now I eat only the good foods, very little meats. Lots of fruits and vegetables. Stopped drinking with the exception of an occasional glass of red wine. Took up Tai Chi for deep breathing and also for the company of the other people that are there. My wife passed away a year and a half ago. Missed her so much, but five guys got a hold of me, and I play pool with them every Tuesday for socialization and getting to know some good men, and then go to Taizé, which is a prayer and meditation concept, and now hang around with only people that I love and that love doing the same thing, and that is to take life from a spiritual standpoint.
Amazing. It's so you've not only proved your doctors wrong, you've gone on another 30 years almost since they told you didn't have much time at that rate.
I am now, the Wymans came over here from England in 1796. None of them hit 80, and I'm now 12 years older than the one that was the oldest male. The females went to 103, and my Aunt Jen, who last did to 103 years old, told me, Douglas, you have my gene.
Thanks, Doug. I hope you have a healthy and happy 2020. It seems like he's hitting all the boxes there. He's eating right. He's doing physical activity. He's surrounding himself with a social crew that adds to his life. You know, some of this stuff can feel daunting to people. You know, there are just so many things that we're told, you should do this, you should do that. It's easy to feel guilty, I think, if you're not doing it all. What tips do you all have? Molly, I'll start with you, for people who might feel a little intimidated when it comes to all of this.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, you may be doing more than you think. So maybe take a look at what you already are doing. And that can help encourage you to then look at, okay, and there might be some places where, you know, there are holes. And so that might be in your physical routine, or maybe it's socially, spiritually, or mental, emotional health. And then look at, maybe there is one big thing you could try to commit to that might take time and money, which are the biggest barriers, but there's a lot of small things that maybe you're already doing and you can incorporate, slightly different habits that don't necessarily take more time or money. So simple things like, my bed is, you know, maybe you're like, I'm not sleeping well. Maybe you need like different bedding or pillows, or you need to go offline earlier in the night. Or maybe it's giving something up. that you need to do, which is often harder for people. But it's not necessarily about adding stress by having all of these new things that now you have to do to be a quote-unquote good human. And then it's also like forgiving yourself when and having compassion for yourself. That is a form of self-care. It's not letting yourself off the hook, but forgiving yourself when you don't, when you're not perfect and when you're not hitting all the boxes.
Yeah, Jenny, what tips do you have for people thinking about this into 2020?
So what I want to encourage people to consider and really keep top of mind is that this is really a process of an organic and natural evolving part of you, you growing up, you becoming who you are over time. So you're not going to just jump in and do everything at once, and nor should you. You do one thing at a time. And if you think about a Chicago blizzard, we haven't had one in a minute, but I was growing up in the time when we had them. You put one foot in front of the other, you look down at your feet, and you do one step at a time. And what will happen is that when you go at your own pace, the balance comes, because as you're doing one thing at a time and you become good at that, it becomes a part of who you are. So now you don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. It is what you do. And then you do the next thing, because now the next thing that's ready to be a part of your life in a natural, normal, everyday way is going to pop up, and you deal with that. And then you look up and you're like Doug, and you're doing all of the things on the box, but you do them one at a time. You don't jump into it and say, I've changed my whole life in 15 minutes. That's not how that works. If you've done that, stop it. Go back and do one thing at a time, and you'll get there. This is not a race.
Molly, you said that your 2019 word kind of ended up being space, mm-hmm. allowing yourself the space to step back from a very sort of driven lifestyle. Do you have a word yet for what 2020 will be, or any goals for how you want to take care of yourself in the new year?
Yeah, I have two words that have sort of come up for me, and one is nourishment. So does what I'm doing feel nourishing is a good guiding question for me. And the other one is connection. That connection can be with myself, with others, or with a higher power. And if I can let those two words guide my decisions about how I spend my time, money, energy, I think it'll be a good 2020.
What about you, Jenny?
I will continue to use my phrase of grace and ease, and that, you know, I keep in mind every time I see something that I judge, I will say, but for the grace of God, there go I, and allow things to come up and allow myself to deal with it, face it, own it, and move on.
All right. That's Jenny Cristerna, licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist with International High Achievers. Also, Molly Cooling, massage therapist and Reiki practitioner.